What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times. This is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum as well as mints. Got caffeine, L-theanine, and vitamins B6 and 12. Helps with memory and focus. I like to chew it really all the time, or just anytime I feel like I need a little bit of a mental boost, I'll pop a piece. Got about 40 milligrams of caffeine per piece, so it's not going to make you super jittery or keep you up all night. And then, you know, I'll chew it when I'm making phone calls, when I'm driving around showing houses to my clients, before a big meeting, before a workout. Just really anytime I feel like I need a little bit of a boost, I pop a piece. So get out there and try some NeuroGum.
Shout out to our people over at Captain Beard Co. So if you're looking for great grooming products, especially around your beard, they have amazing stuff. They got beard butter, balm, oils, and then shampoo, body wash, conditioner. And the great thing about it is it's made with all natural ingredients. So some of the best stuff that you can actually use for your beard, your hair, and your body. Not to mention they have some amazing smelling candles. So check them out, and when you go to make a purchase, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Also, shout out to our friends at Hand Wraps Rolling Papers. They're the highest quality rolling papers on the market. He's got rice rolling papers as well as hemp rolling papers, and they're just really high quality. He's a local guy here to St. Louis. They're in 16 local dispensaries here in St. Louis. If cannabis is legal in your state, get out there and try some Hand Wraps Rolling Papers. And before we get started on the show, if we could just ask a favor of anybody that's watching, if you've been paying attention to us for any length of time, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button for us. You know, we're a newer podcast, still trying to really grow this thing. And, you know, if you could click that subscribe button, and if you really want to go the extra mile, tell a friend that you think would like the show. Because, like I said, we're just trying to grow this thing. So without further ado, let's introduce our awesome guest today. He is a real estate investor. He is the director of sales at Faster House, the great and powerful Matt Cresco, on for the second time.
Welcome back, sir.
Boys.
Welcome back, man.
He's 94, 95 episodes later?
Yeah.
That is crazy. And three sponsors later.
Yeah, how about
you guys,
that?
You guys didn't have these when we were first rolling.
No, we didn't.
Look at us go.
Yeah. I like the new setup, by the way. Yeah. That mural, that thing right
pretty
there
sweet,
is pretty sick. Yeah, Pat was telling me beforehand that you got a buddy that does graffiti.
Graffiti, yeah. He's done a bunch in like a lot of the Mission Tacos, and he works at Proper Cannabis, and like he's that kind of guy. He's just real artsy, and I waited tables with him like growing up, like working at First Watch.
First Watch.
And he was a waiter then, and you know, he's just always drawing like graffiti on shit and like, but in like on his like notepads and shit, and and I thought of him. I was like, man, it'd be really cool to like just get something like really big made up, and someone that I know, and just something that can hang behind us. And I was just like, I want to get more artwork in the studio. So
that's a sick setup.
Yeah.
And congrats on all the success that you guys have been having.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. We love it, man. We're just having fun with it. You know, I mean, it's not super huge by any means, but you know, at this point, but who knows? We're just going to keep doing it, keep showing up. And
well,
you know.
So what was it? 20 episodes, something like that? If you get past 20, you're in the like top 1% of podcasters.
Yeah, that was our goal at first. And then, okay, well, that was pretty easy.
Yeah. How long has it been in total now?
It'll be a year in December.
Yeah, it'll be a year in December. We got 3 episodes out for 2024. So I think we started like late December, like after Christmas. I think we knocked out 3. And
so you guys are going to hit 100 before a full year. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
2 a week, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be this is episode 99, and then we have a kind of a cool thing planned for episode 100. So that'll be cool whenever we release that one. So
it's badass.
But Matt, you've been on a fucking tear, bro. You've done a lot has changed since you've been on, you know, when was it? Back in January?
We've all gone through some changes. So tell us about yours.
Yeah.
So I guess since the last time that I was on, I went through 2023 as an acquisition manager at Faster House. So just learning the ropes of wholesaling. 2024, January, they approached me to take on the director of sales role, which has been awesome. And then about halfway through the year, I started really getting comfortable with starting to invest and picking up like why I got into real estate investing to begin with, right? Passive income, wealth building, all the good stuff. And then June, I guess it was June 4th, I bought my first duplex. July, I bought another duplex. August, I bought another duplex. September, I bought two single family homes, one of them being a flip. And then just closed on a couple more, no, one more, so, which puts me at 11 doors total. And just finished my first flip, just hit the market last week.
Sick.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Dude,
congratulations,
huge. Man. Yeah, that's incredible. So a lot to dive into there. So you went from an acquisitions manager to director of sales. Like how do those roles differ? And like what's the kind of the changes in your day-to-day has been since switching roles?
Yeah, so I am in kind of a player coach role. Okay. I still buy houses for the company as an acquisitions manager, but I'm growing, recruiting, training, and overall leading the acquisitions team. So we've got about seven guys right now, currently hiring for, looking for one more. So they're all home buyers. They all find off market properties. So most wholesaling companies will use traditional marketing methods. They'll use cold calling. They'll use mailers, digital marketing, stuff like that. We use that, but that only accounts for about 30% of our business. About 70% of our businesses are all referral generated. And so we're the biggest in St. Louis to do that. We buy about 260 houses a year. We're also one of the best nationally that do that. When we go to these big, called Collective Genius, it's a big real estate meetup, investor meetup. And we go there and everybody's always asking us questions about how we buy houses. So my goal is to help guys, yes, with sales processes, right? Like, hey, when you get in the door, you know, how do you identify motivation, condition, timeline, price, yada, yada, yada. But half the job is teaching them to go out and find. So
how to network. Yeah, you do an amazing job of that. So
that is probably one of the biggest reasons that they hired me in the role. Not only was I a workhorse when it came to networking, but I'm also a guy that like I feel like I need to have a playbook when I do things so I can follow that playbook, right? Just like when we go to the gym, right? It's easier to have a playbook. So I helped kind of write the playbook and how to go out and network. I met both of you through networking. I think it was Paula from First Form that ended up introducing us because I made a social media post and she was like, you got to connect with Zach. And then Zach introduced us.
Yep.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that I go back and I'm like, how do we get introduced? And I'm like, it's like this daisy chain of like, well, introduce to this person who introduces me to this person and so on and so forth. But no, it's been a really fun year. You know, like I said, I went like 2 years without really buying anything for my personal portfolio, and kind of grinding out real estate. Now I'm leading a team, and
this is year three, right?
July was officially year two.
Okay,
so into year three right now.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
So then you've bought 11 rental properties, essentially, or?
Yeah, so 11 doors.
11 doors.
Yep, so combination of duplexes and single family homes. I guess the coolest part about this is like the, I guess, depends on what's important to you. Some people like cash flow, some people like equity, some people like tax benefits. It's kind of cool just having all of it, I would say.
Yeah.
So my cash flow isn't anything like, to necessarily brag about. It's about a little over $1,000 a month, but it's monthly recurring cash flow, right? And that's only going to grow from here. But it's cool. I'm averaging about $40,000 added to my net worth per door.
Sick.
Right? So once I finish these refinances, I will have added like $300,000 to my net worth over the course of like 6-7 months, which is wild because we always talk about active income. And when I was probably until like a year ago, really, I was always just like, about what you make. And then I looked at it and it's like my girlfriend's like huge on like saving. She's like, it's actually what you save. And I'm like, really? It's at the end of the day, it's like, what are you putting towards your net worth? So when I think of like, okay, I could go out and make a really good active income of like $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, that's great. How many people can sit there and say like I got to add $300,000 to my net worth? And then that's only going to amplify month over month, every month that debt is paid down a
right.
Mm. Plus appreciation.
Appreciation. Yep. Whole gamut.
Yeah. Gotta love real estate.
Yeah.
how are you buying this? Because I really want to get into the mentorship and coaching you've done. So I would imagine that's a piece of it. But what would you say has been like the key to buying this property?
Yeah. So, I would say number one would be being at Faster House. As you guys know, before I even got into real estate, I was an entrepreneur. I owned my own business. I shifted into this, fell on my face trying to do it on my own. Faster House brought me in, showed me the ropes. My initial goal was to do my 2 years, learn the world of real estate, get out, go and do my own. What I've realized is there's probably a chance I could make more active income on my own, but from a wealth building perspective, it's like I am in the best spot anybody could possibly be, which is in the doors of Faster House. The owners have a $50 million rental portfolio. You can literally go from buying the deal at Faster House, which is half my deals have come through those doors from other people and not just me. Go from buying it to walking downstairs and getting a loan for the purchase and the rehab to going to the construction company and having them manage your construction and do the project management and then send it right over to the property manager.
That's awesome. All in-house.
Yeah. And so it is all in-house. And then on top of that, we do cool things like a monthly wealth building mastermind that Lucas Walls, one of the owners, he runs Point On, where we all talk about, okay, how many doors do you have? Which cash flow do you have? How much equity do you have? What are your goals for this year? And then what are you going to do to get which I don't think you look at any other real estate investing companies. I think they want everybody just focused on what you're doing. And I think it's a very unique thing about Faster House that's like why a lot of people want to work there. But yeah, did I start to ramble?
No, okay. Good. Keep going.
Cool. So yeah, that's where we're at. So number one is half the deals came through Faster House. The other half were self-generated and through networking with wholesalers, real estate agents, loan officers. And and then another piece of that, I guess, on how I hit that growth was through coaching and mentorships. Pretty big believer in that. James Gleason, yeah, guy you guys know. Have you guys had him on yet?
No, we need to.
You got to have him on.
Yeah, absolutely.
He is, he just hit, when I met him in October of last year, he was at like right at 100 doors. And then.
To like 240.
Yeah, over the course of a little over a year, he's at like, you know, almost mid 200s now. Yeah, unbelievable growth. Also, a guy that's not only like been there, done that, bought the T-shirt, but like lives, eats, and breathes like mentorship. Available like to access him for any and all questions at just about any time. But he was a big part of helping me, getting mentorship by Lucas Walls and guys like Sam Prim and my COO, Matt Lauman. Like that was a big piece of it. But, and then I've joined other masterminds and coaching programs. You know, I'm a firm believer in that stuff. My expenses are pretty minimal right now. I still live in the downstairs of my duplex, but my like mastermind and coaching expenses are fucking off the charts.
Okay.
Which I think you should. I think if you're an entrepreneur in any way, shape or form,
you got to reinvest. Yeah.
Reinvest that money into people that can teach you things, but you have to, it's a caveat, right? Like you have to put in massive action
with
the things that you're learning. Yes, implementation, 100%.
You can't just do the coaching courses or read the books or do whatever and just like sit on your ass and wait for it to come to you. It's never.
Which is funny because there's some people that actually just believe that's how the world works.
I just want it really, really bad. Yeah. It's going to come.
Yeah, manifestation's one thing, but you got to put the effort. Manifest that shit.
Yes.
How many people out there have just tried to manifest something and they're still sitting there in the basement? You know. You got to implement it. That's the only way that it happens.
I agree. You know, I'm a believer in something bigger than us out there. You know, God, sure. Universe, law of attraction, whatever it is that you want to put to it. But I don't believe that shit just happens by thinking it into existence. You got to go out and take action because that's the only.
Yeah, I mean, I forget who says it, but a goal is just a dream. Action.
Yep. So love that.
Right. Luck is like an equation between hard work and opportunity or something. You know, it's like, it's not just luck. It's like all the shit that you did before that kind of lead you into that into that split, into that space where it actually happens. Yeah, sure, it might be lucky this guy, or whatever relationship it came down to. Ultimately, it was like all the hard work and all the shit you did before that.
That put you in that position.
Yeah. I mean, we're all in sales. The harder you work, the luckier you get.
Right? Yeah.
So it's a numbers. It's a twofold. It is a numbers game. And if you've ever been a loan officer, real estate agent, wholesaler, you understand that the more people you talk to, right, that are potential prospects or whatever, the more deals that you're going to do. But the unquantifiable thing are the synaptic connections that you're making every time that you go out and have a conversation or do, like, you start to uncover things to where you can automatically go out and just do some work. And eventually you know that, like, you can do less work to achieve that result. So that's kind of a cool way to look at it. But yeah, the more you work, the luckier you'll essentially.
Speaking of that, I mean, the last time you were on here, you're telling us about your daily tracker. You still rocking that thing? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Scorecards, man.
Scorecard.
I have all my guys on it now.
Okay.
Really?
First thing I did when I got into the director of sales role was one of the reasons they put me in there was because of my systems and processes. So pre-2022 July, which obviously a monumental point for all of us, right? It was just go out, talk to people, you fall into a deal. Or you could fall into a listing or you could fall into a loan, right? And then all of a sudden, after years of it getting easier, it just got significantly harder. And so they saw me developing my own scorecards of like, all right, what are the things that I can control that probably lead to me buying a house? And then how many times do I want to do those on a week-to-week basis? And so I do that for, it's a little bit more difficult in a leadership position because I have like one of the things on my, I've got seven guys. So I want to talk to every single one of those guys once a day just to keep a pulse on them, see how things are going, see how I can clear obstacles. And then the other stuff kind of fluctuates, right? We've got a CRM that I'm in every day because I help with underwriting. So I want to make sure I clear all my notifications out from a leadership perspective, but all the other shit is like in flux. Sometimes I got to recruit. Sometimes I got to do training. Sometimes it's group training, one-on-one training. But yeah, scorecards, I'm using it there. I'm using it in my personal life too, from a financial perspective and also from like a fitness perspective. Like how many days a week am I hitting my macros, hitting my steps and all that other stuff. But I'm a fairly left brain analytical person. I know some people that can produce a lot of success by just like feel vibes. And I fucking envy those people because I'm like, I need to know how to do it. I need to see the process by which to do it so that I know I'm winning even on the days it doesn't feel like I'm winning.
No, I might fall into that second. I'm not as good about tracking shit. I'm not as organized as I should be. That's for sure. But
yeah,
somehow things just seem to happen sometimes, you know?
It's all a spectrum. Yeah. You know what I mean? And what I say is like, we've got a guy on our team, Dennis Montgomery, and he's been doing this for 7 years. He's the best buyer on our team and has been for quite some time. And it's like, he's the guy that is like, I don't remember what I did 2 days ago. You know what I mean? Like, but the funny thing is when I talk about those like unconscious synaptic connections you make by being in the position long enough, if you were to follow his day, he has a cadence and he has rhythm. He has weekly emails that he sends to all of his agents to remind him that he's still buying houses. He clears out his CRM every single day. Like, although he doesn't have a set process to follow, he's been doing it enough to where subconsciously he knows the things that he needs to do day in and day out. So I'm just more of the person that likes to look at it on paper, but it's more of a, you know, on a spectrum, than sure, like a binary, I am or am not.
Well, you mentioned one of your jobs being recruiting. We've brought this up a few times on the show. How's that been?
Fun.
Has it?
Yeah. So when I was in the world of recruitment, I liked it.
Yeah, because that was your full-time gig for a while, right?
I was a headhunter for about 8 or 9 years. Yeah. And so I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was good money. Now I'm recruiting only for my personal team. So it is fun to the idea of like, hey, I'm going to match this person up with this company and I'm going to get a solid paycheck out of it. It's a lot more fun where it's like, hey, I'm recruiting my own fucking army. Like, these are the guys that are going
to
be
going to battle with.
They're going, yeah, 100%. So I love the fact that I can do that. There's still turnover. I still get it wrong a lot of the times. And that's just
Yeah.
100% commission roles, right?
Yeah, you can't predict what somebody's going to do or how they're going to produce.
Realizes my best way now to recruit is a network. I put it on social media. I let other people share it. I go into real estate investing groups. I find people that are already doing it in some capacity. I build up a pipeline of people and bring them through the process. So it's the recruitment bit has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing I've noticed. You've gotten a lot more on social over the last year, for sure.
Yeah. You guys know Adam McChesney?
Yeah.
He's been on the podcast.
Yeah.
I just did his last week.
Oh, that's right. You were on it. I saw that. I actually just opted out. I'm going to join his BOA again, but I stopped showing up for so long that I'm like, hey, let me opt out for now. But when I first joined BOA, Builders of Authority, he gave me a simple playbook, and it was like post 2 times a day and add 5 people that you think are relevant to your circle on Facebook. And so that's what I did. I started doing it. Sometimes they're like long, drawn out posts that are significant milestones in my life. Sometimes they are quotes. Sometimes I'm like, fucking can't think of anything. ChatGPT, help me formulate a post about X, Y, or Z. But like, it's definitely helped me build a little bit of a brand. And it's just weird how like that starts to evolve. Like you do that for 90 days, all of a sudden people start paying a little bit more attention to what you're doing.
Yeah. Even if it's stupid shit, like me posting my little egg flip.
Yeah, know? Love
like,
it.
People love that stupid, like I wouldn't keep doing it if people like, are like expecting it. You know, like every morning I make 4 eggs and I, you know, just worked in a breakfast restaurant. So people are always, they seem to be, you know, impressed the fact that I can flip them. And
what's the most amount of eggs you've ever flipped?
Dude, there's this other guy. People send me this guy's videos all the time. He like does like absurd amounts, like 24 eggs and shit like that. He'll like do these flips. Uh-huh. I'm like, I need to like start doing that. I don't know what I've done like 6 or 7 before.
Yeah.
But like this guy gets like, there's like big ass pans and he like.
Do they break?
Probably.
I was going to say, that's a lot of weight for...
It's a lot of weight, you know? Like, just even, like, you got to, like, be, like, 2 hands, you know? So I'm like, technique's going to definitely be off with using 2 hands.
But that's also the thing. It's like, you're still known. Like, and some people know you as, like, the egg flipping guy.
Yeah.
And but at the end of the day, it's like they're watching your story.
They're paying attention.
They're watching your story popping up in their algorithm, right? Eventually, they're gonna look for a fucking real estate agent.
Right.
And they're going to be like, wait a second, the egg flipping guy also sells
houses.
Yes. Yeah. Or the podcast guy also sells houses or whatever that is. Like everything that you guys are doing here, it's marketing and it's branding. I have a love-hate relationship with it because sometimes it feels like a lot of extra work to do it. Or sometimes I'm like, maybe I don't want to be the fucking face of whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like I look at Sam Prim.
Yeah.
Sam.
On a hell of a job.
Oh my God. Fucking talk about like a guy that not only took advantage of a time when like TikTok was really making its boom,
mm-hmm.
but like double down on the work to do that. And he's got 3 million followers across all platforms, mm-hmm. right? Wild. And a big piece of that is the success that it's had. But sometimes I look at that and I'm like, man, I see how much he's in front of a camera. And I'm like, is that what I want to do? Like,
he's a Missouri State.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he would do it in a heartbeat.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
Definitely. We were in the same dorms again.
Really?
Yeah.
Small world. Man, that's crazy.
Super small world. So, you know, I think Andrew Bird.
The names.
There's a handful of guys in our office that all went to college with him.
Yep.
But yeah, they're good dudes. He would do it. Lucas Walls would come on here in a heartbeat. Like they're obviously the co-owners of Faster House and Faster Freedom and all that other stuff. But they would for sure pop on.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah. Definitely reach out for sure. Oh, that's great.
So what else is going on?
What else is going on? Yeah. You know, life is good.
Yeah.
Life is, that's it. I work, you know what I mean? I work, spend time with my girlfriend, her 3-year-old daughter.
Yeah. It seems like, you got a girlfriend now and you guys seem really happy. Just you guys are going on all these trips and stuff. It's awesome.
Yeah.
You just got back from like New Orleans. Right?
We did just get back to New Orleans. So New Orleans is, you guys been?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So New Orleans is fun. Some people consider it a little bit dirty, but yes, I could see why people would say that, but it's an inexpensive city. It's got a cool downtown with a lot of history. Food's really good. And then we were in a wedding and it's tradition when you, I guess, get married in the French Quarter, you end the reception with everybody walks out of the reception and then there's a police car sitting. The police car goes, turns its lights on, and then bride and groom behind that, a marching band behind that, and a wedding party behind them. And then you like literally go down Bourbon Street.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, they like clear the roads. Yeah, yeah, they were clearing the roads. Like people were like on the balconies and the streets, like taking videos. So it was a good time. New Orleans was a lot of fun. But yeah, we've been on a handful of trips recently, and she's got a super busy life. She's software sales at a big company. She's got a 3-year-old daughter, but she's starting to get integrated into kind of what I'm doing a little bit, which is cool.
Yeah, see, she just bought a house. Did she just buy one?
She just bought a new build over in Columbia, Illinois, but she's very interested in like the idea of building passive wealth. Yeah. Or building wealth in general. The idea of doing flips. She was a very process oriented person. So we've been meeting regularly, still very early on, obviously. We're just dating right now, although it's a serious relationship. You know, we're not engaged or married or anything, but 2025, we're really going to start getting serious about like, hey, let's do a flip together. Mm. Or let's take on a rental together. Let's see if there's something that could work here.
Yeah, if you vibe together in a business sense instead of just a relationship.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, yeah. What better way to test a relationship? Flip a house.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of flips, so you just did your first flip. How is that in comparison to, you know, kind of what you've done in the other realms of real estate?
So flip is...
Yeah, it's different, right?
Ask me when it sells. Yeah. No. Yeah. But there is a difference. So there's rental grade and then there's flip grade. Rental grade, people look at a house completely different of like, can I live here for
a year,
maybe 2 years, maybe three, possibly. A flip are people that are going to make a really, really big investment. So everything from the flooring can be fairly similar, although you probably want to get a little more luxury flooring, but the countertops are different, finishes are different. You got to pay a lot more attention to detail in terms of like paint and everything. Then the house be ready for inspections to pop up. And it's very similar until like the last couple of weeks, because the last couple of weeks we went through like 3 or 4 different punch lists of like things that needed to be done or needed to be redone. And it's been a cool experience though. It's been on the market for a little less than, so no major hits just yet, but it was a awesome experience.
Yeah. And you'll do more of them?
Yes. Yeah. I think the goal next year is to try to do at least 1 a quarter.
Okay.
Because if I'm already, if I can find the deals, if I can source the money, and if I can have multiple rehab crews for that, there's no reason not to, right? If I can have somebody that'll GC most of it.
Were you GCing this one?
Yeah, I GC'd this. I got a guy, Dave Sotelo. He's been helping me a lot. He's been he does all the cosmetic work, but he also has communicated a little bit with the people outside of his scope. So he's been awesome. But I GC'd most of it for sure. But I figure why not add an extra, you know, what do you make on a flip? Like 20 to 25K, right?
Yeah.
Why not explore the opportunity to do that like once a quarter?
Sure.
If you have the resources and capacity.
Well, yeah, and you have the deals at your, you know, at your disposal, you know, and it's like every deal, that's the way I look at it, is like every deal that you find, there's a way to make it. Okay. Do we flip it, turn it into a hold? You know, there's like a formula to make every house work, and every, you know, it all depends on what you buy it for, obviously.
Yep.
But like there's a number that makes every house a good deal.
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
Yeah, the underwriting process is really interesting. And so I've got aggressive goals for next year. I had goals for this year that I want to get to 15 doors. I'm at 11 now. And what I've realized is I'm stopping actually because I don't want to say I've grown too fast. But there are holes in my processes. There are holes in the way that I'm budgeting because you have to factor in holding costs. You have to factor in things going over budget. You have to factor in if you're doing hard money, there are monthly interest associated with it. So you're paying interest-only payments. And when you think about burning out of something, like you don't get those interest payments back. So when you have multiple deals going at $1,000 to $2,000 a month, right? That shit starts to add up. And then I want to get more involved in the actual project management side of things. I had a really good contractor for a little bit, but I want to understand like labor and materials so that I can do this at scale. So right now there are a bunch of little holes in property management too. Like I got a vacancy sitting there. So it's like, I need to button up these things first so that when I come in 2025 and I have crazy goals to get X amount of doors, those things aren't going to slow me down or eventually tip me over.
Plus you're still buying too, right? The salesman, you're still buying wholesale.
Yeah. So I'm buying for Faster House. So I'm still going out looking for deals for sure. But right now I'm like, it's something that not a lot of investors talk about, which is growing, scaling. Once you do it once, it's significantly easier to do it two times, three times, four times, five times. But the more you do it, the more your blind spots show. So the more and the bigger impact that they're going to have on you in terms of your pocketbook, in terms of your stress, in terms of your time management, in terms of the timeline it's going to take you to complete these projects. So although like I've got this big ego and I'm like, no, let's push. I'm a risk taker. I bounce a lot of ideas off my girlfriend though, who's less, or I should say more risk averse. So she's has a little bit more reason than I do. And she's like, why don't we just take a step back? Why don't we dial in the processes and then come out 2025 swinging?
I live in that same world. I'm the risk taker and she's the, whoa, wait a minute. Wait, what are you doing? You
know, like it's a great balance.
Yes, for
it's
sure.
A good yin and yang.
Because there's definitely some mistakes I would have made if I would achieve hadn't. Like, hey, have you thought of this? I hadn't. You know?
Yeah,
like,
without them, we'd be fucked.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like, I'm just like, dude, let's jump. You yeah. know? Right. Hey, I can see the bottom. We're all right. You
yeah.
know?
<We're good.
laughs> And yeah, dude. Because yeah, I've done a handful of flips as well. And dude, they just get, dude, there's just every single one I've ever done. I think I've done six at this point. And then this year, I've also done three wholetailed where mm-hmm. we bought them and cleared them out. Those, yeah. honestly, like, those have been the best deals I've ever
done. Yeah.
Financially and for like, of it, you
bang
know,
for your buck, the time dude, you have to spend to
own,
do it.
Own them for like less than 2 weeks, you know.
Yeah, you're just going in.
Right. Yeah, so we bought these houses. They're usually ones that are people that are, you know, they inherit a house is typically the situation. At least all three of these were where somebody inherited it, and then you know they don't even live in town, or they're, you know, the, like, we don't know what to do with all this shit. We don't want to like clean all this out. Like they usually go through, get anything that's of value, and we'll just buy it from you with everything in it, and then buy it, clean it out. You know, pay a crew to go over there, fill a couple dumpsters, and then essentially like get it professionally cleaned and listed.
Yep.
And really fine. I mean, one of them, I guess the first two we didn't even list. I found off market buyers, but the last one we listed and got nine offers.
Yeah.
Selling for like 20 grand over what we asked. Holy shit.
So just telling me, you got that. Look.
Yeah, I was going to say, I drove by the other day. Yeah, because Melissa, his ex-wife, was the agent who represented the buyer that bought it. Yeah, and I drove by the other day, like completely painted the whole outside of the house and like whitewashed it. You did on your
yeah. She's with CRS.
Yep.
Yeah. I went to a big dinner with all like CRS people not too long ago. Adam Draghi and Corey Boxer are good buddies of mine. But those wholetail deals, yeah. So we
was she there?
Melissa? Yeah.
Melissa and Dalton.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yeah, they were both there. Those wholetail deals we had, I remember probably coming up on a year ago, I had one where I was texted an agent in the morning. She called me an hour after that about a house in Imperial. And the house was cool. It was a log cabin, but it was kind of a wonky house. But it was on a good plot of land. And it had this massive, like, brand new storage, like, garage type, like, almost like industrial barn type thing. And we were trying to figure out what we were going to do with it. The comps are rough or something
yeah,
like that.
Of course. It's like, what are you doing? Not any, like, especially something.
Yep. And so I forget the exact numbers on it, like what we bought it for versus what we sold it for, but we cleaned it up. We listed it on the market and then we ended up getting an offer for $110,000 spread
on
the fucking thing. Yes. Which was fucking wild. Obviously I don't take all that. I get a piece of that in terms of commission, but like it is pretty crazy. Like, the whole tail side of things is becoming more and more popular, especially with, even though it's like a slower season, interest rates are a little bit higher, inventory is still super low.
Still super low, and I don't think that's going to change anything.
Yeah, nationally, here in Missouri, it's still down 21% from where we were pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah, most there's a lot of places around the country that are better off were in the pre-pandemic. It just hasn't
here yet. Yeah, funny enough, October ticked up in home sales. which is like over the past 5 years.
That was
historically the time where things start to, you know,
every October like was my goes like that was my biggest month.
That was
of my career.
That was my best month of this year.
Was it?
Yeah.
It's wild. Yeah, yeah. Our numbers matched up in terms of like house buys. As they, I think we bought 28 houses in October as a company, and I think it was either the best month or tied for the best month. It was either like June or July or sometime in the middle of the summer when it's traditionally a little bit better.
That's
pretty sweet.
That's so awesome. Weird that October. Who knows? It's like you never know what's going to happen. Like
those people are scared about the election.
Or yeah. And then I feel like I'm noticing and you and I have talked about this. I think we talked about episodes, but like I feel like right now I'm feeling a big jump or big like uptick in business for sure.
So I was talking to our pricing department. Most of our loan officers are slow.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And I was talking to Matt before I started rolling. But we had this 5 contracts last week, 5 or 6 buyers offering this past week. I talked to listing today about a deal, sent over a couple pre-approvals last night for people that were writing on houses during the week. And typically, writing houses on offer during the week, you're going to win those offers. So.
Yeah. Less competitive.
All right, so I might have an offer.
Well, hopefully you'll get one from me eventually. Dude, this has been a goddamn night. It's like a hedge fund owns this house in Imperial. Yeah, it's like dealing with like buying a house from Walmart. It's just like such a I sent a counter back and I didn't get one back for 5 days.
Yeah,
come on, just like.
Yep.
We basically like agreed to thing, but we were just like arguing over the title company because they wanted to use their like title company we've heard of. And they're like, we have this weird way to be paid out and we have all these things to pay off and it has to go through this and this and this.
The house is in a portfolio.
Yeah.
So got it.
There's a whole.
Yep.
And they're like, well, our title company is the only one that's how to do this. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Right. And I was just like a little sketched out because they own the title company too.
Right.
And it's like a little weird.
We're just like, so because you're saying that this is the only title company, they're going to charge excess fees. To our clients, and, we shot it over to people that we know.
Yeah, he said he could do it.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, no. So I, tried to argue my case for like, it took like, 5 days basically because I was like, hey, we got a title company that could do it. Like, here's the email from him saying that he can do it, and then like crickets for 5 days. Sent back like, no, have to use our title. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah,
like, but it's just
one of the problem. Yeah, one of the biggest problems with hedge fund companies, they're not a family. Looking to, like, they don't need the money. They don't need to move. They're not
right.
Forced by deadlines because they're selling off and buying everything else. And there's, like, so many layers to the people that are actually running the show. It's like there's just no need or there's no sense of urgency around it.
That, too. The house has been sitting for a while. Low, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, they're asking $230 for it. I think it's been on the market a month and a half. Maybe I've read it. And then we went in at 200. They countered at 230. Came back like 220, 230. Like, all right, but they're like, we want the house. Let's just buy it for 230. And once we agreed to that, I was like, okay, well, it's a done deal. And then we just like trying to get them to sign the contract and like agree. Then the whole title company kind of a pain. But I think we'll get it all figured out.
Rewrite a whole new one.
Yeah, I had to rewrite a whole new one this morning because I wanted a clean contract. I was like, fuck, dude.
Yeah.
Like just, it,
it's a world we live in, right?
Yeah. Like, so hey, what's been of this whole year with all this growth? What would you think? What would you say your biggest win has been? Is there a property that you bought? Oh, this is my. Do you have a favorite of all your children?
So in terms of this year, real estate, yeah. I think my coolest deal was definitely my first deal. Which was I bought the property for $115,000. I put $50,000 into it, so $165,000 all in, and then had a private money lender fund everything, so I didn't have to pay anything until the back end. And then it appraised at I needed $220,000 to fully burn out of it. Appraised at $265,000.
Sick.
So I got a $12,000 check at closing, and then on a 20-year note, it cash flows like $400-something,
dude,
on a duplex.
That's so. Awesome.
That was cool. Yeah. And I think, from a personal standpoint, I already kind of talked about this, but I think I think getting more serious with my girlfriend and idea of like going into business with somebody and exploring that. I always think of like Layla and Alex Hormozi and how they have that dynamic. So from a personal standpoint, my biggest win is her. And just because she might be listening to this, I kind of have to say that, right?
Of course.
But yeah, all the above. And I, the first deal, not only was it the best and most lucrative deal, but it was proof of concept. So once I did that, I was able to do it over and over again and learn a little bit each time.
So of all these deals you've bought, all the doors you have they all been burrs?
Every single one of them has been burrs.
Okay.
There's been a couple that, one I went over budget. There was one that I got, like I said, I made $12,000 on. There's one I owed a little bit of money at the end. So yeah, but really for the most part, it's like I'm getting in and out of these with little to nothing.
And for those listeners that don't know, what is BRRRR stand?
Buy, rehab, rent, refinance, and repeat. So you buy the property, buy, rehab is the order. So you buy the property that's distressed, you rehab it. Usually you buy it at about a 60 to 70% discount. You rehab it. And then when you refinance, a new appraisal goes on there and the bank gives you a loan for 75% value of the property. So they give you that 75%. You rent it out and you repeat the process. Hopefully it cash flows, but the idea is you just got 25% equity in this house that was added to your net worth or whatever, whichever way that you want to put it. And you now have a cash flowing asset that also has tax benefits.
That's awesome. And so you've done that 11 times or eight times with
some that, like probably closer to six times, like duplexes and stuff like that.
Hmm? Yeah, man. It's a smart way. But now again, let's, for people that might not know, how do you go about finding these homes? You talked about it earlier through your network and things like that. But when an agent calls you, sends you a property, and you go, you do the underwriting. How do you, what is that? What is that process?
Yeah. So comps are something that we're all familiar with, especially like agents that have MLS access. So the goal is to look at that property and not look at what it's worth right now, but look at what it could be worth if it were fixed up similar to the other properties in the area. And then you take anywhere between 70 and 75% of that. That's your starting number. You subtract the repair costs. We have a rehab calculator, I guess, Google sheet that you just kind of plug in, like small kitchen, medium kitchen, large kitchen, how many bathrooms, is it just need a vanity, this. And it's like line item by line item. And it spits out the number and then factors in an 10%. So we usually try to buy it around there.
Yeah.
I think the difference between us and like retail, as you guys probably know, is usually there's some form of distress. You know, the property's physically distressed, emotional distress, financial distress. For some reason, those people prioritize speed and convenience over getting top dollar. And so a lot of people have a really bad outlook on wholesalers or cash buyers and say they're trying to screw people over. And it's like, no, when you buy a property that's $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, you inherit a lot of risk. Goal is to make money out of that. So we do a really good job being honest that like you can get more money by taking this to the market. But if you prioritize speed and convenience over getting top dollar, you want to get rid of it, here is our price. You can tell if that price matches up with what you want. And if it's not what you want, it's perfectly fine. We lead them to go seek out a real estate.
Yeah.
And now when it comes to obviously a lot of hard money. Money for down payment, like for a hard money loan, most of the time, 25% down on something like that.
No. I've never had to put money down for a hard money loan. Some people do require it, but there's also
your in-house lender, right?
I've used a couple of different ones, and I've never necessarily had to put. Most will have you if they don't know you and they're just building the relationship. They'll have you put money down for the hard money loan. Some, maybe it's a little bit more regular. Private money is the way. If you can find somebody that will finance the purchase and the rehab, because even with hard money, what they'll do is they'll give you the purchase money and then you have to come out of pocket for the rehab, but they'll do disbursements. They'll do draws. So they'll give you a little bit back once they see receipts, once they go see the property. Smart on their part, right? Sure. They absolutely, you know, being as big as companies as they are, they should do that. But from an investor standpoint, you can find somebody that won't charge points and will pay everything up front. That's the best way to do it, because then you don't have the bleeding holding costs that you don't get to recoup at the end of it. Because most banks now won't let you refinance and recoup any of that money or get any of it, because they don't want to see you not having any stake in it when they know you got the loan for this, then you're using them for that.
Now, how do you go about finding these private lenders? Just a rich guy, you know, or like a rich doctor, lawyer, you know, or do you just like, you have a way?
So I did it through a social media post.
Okay.
And, you know, there was, I guess, whatever, like, I think I did it in the wrong way. Technically, like, there's a legal way you can post about looking for money, but I'm a fucking small, you know, nobody knows me. But apparently there's a specific way if you're going to ask for social media for private money lending, the text has to be around it. So looking into your network, one of the biggest things I found since I talk to people is, like, first find the people with money, like disposable money, like liquid cash. And then if you want to, like, subsector, like an even better group of people, it's people that already believe in real estate. Because it's tough to convince people to give you their money and believe that they're going to get better returns in the current real estate, or not state, like stock market or whatever. It is even tougher if you have to convince them to give you money and convince them why real estate is a good asset class to invest in. So somebody that might have been a landlord at some point in time and didn't like the idea of being a landlord, or they've done flips, or they understand in some way, shape, or form that real estate's a good investment. And then, dude, just fucking network. Like, it's wild. It's like, I look at sales, I look at networking, I look at recruiting, I look at building referral-based business. It's all the same thing. It's all getting out and talking to as many people as you possibly can. And what I realize is I go through this phase of, like, when I need to get something, whether it's a private money lender or a deal, I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do? How am I going to do this? And then all of a sudden I start talking to people. And then there's, like, a period where I'm just, like, talking to everybody. And then all of a sudden, like, one person leads to another person. And then I get an idea about talking to another. And, like, it's right in front of me. So it's all the same shit. It's just talking to people. It's targeting the right people that are going to be more likely to do whatever it is that you're looking for. In this case, private money. And then you talk to enough of those people. And eventually one of them believes in you. And you give it a go.
Give it a shot.
And then you just refinance it and pay them back.
Yep. Refinance it. Pay him back. So the private money lender that I'm doing, that I did on my first one, he's now funding this one. It's flipped. So he'll.
Oh, sweet.
Yep.
Now, is there a certain return that you, like, you guys, like, negotiate on terms and, like, hey, I'm going to give you X amount of percent, you know, or, like, you give me $100,000, you're going to give me $110 back? Or how does that work?
Yeah. So the private money, it's usually anywhere between 8 and 12%. And then every once in a while, people will do, like, points on the back end. So a point is just a percentage of, you know, for the people that don't know, a point is just, like, a percentage on that back end. So if it's 12%, you know, that's usually going to be $1,000 a month in interest. And then if it's an extra point on the back end, then it's, you know, if it's $100,000, obviously it's going to be $1,000, right? So my private money lender, when we first did it, it was 10 and 1. And it was, and then he, after doing that, I think he was pretty happy with his return, but he talked to a bunch of other people that were doing private money lending. He was realizing people were getting higher rates. And so he was like, hey, he's like, I want 12. And he's like, this is where it would be a little bit more worth it to me. And so instead of negotiating, instead of being like, well, I can find this for 11 and 2 or 12 and 2 or 12 and 1, which I could have. I was like, dude, I'm trying to build a long-term relationship with you. I'm like, one, you give me all the money up front. You don't charge me any interest payments over the course of the month, which puts more money in my pocket. It's huge. And I'm like, they are a significantly well-off couple. They own a digital marketing agency, and they make a lot more money than what I do, and they're going to have a lot more cash down the road. So what I said is, my ultimate goal is to do this enough times on a single-family front for you to where when I have opportunities in apartment complexes, we can actually partner in this together. So that's one thing I will say that I, in just about every area of business, like whether it be contractors or hard money lenders, is I'm never the guy that's going to nickel and dime somebody. Like, my goal is not to get you to do your job at the cheapest way possible. My goal is to build a long-term relationship, knowing that that's going to be somebody that I can trust, somebody that I can go to. They're going to follow through on the things that they say they're going to do. And if I see long-term potential for bigger and better things. And so that's what I'm doing right now with the guy that I want to do contracting with. It's like we're talking about him starting out as a maintenance man, going to my properties, and eventually leading a construction team, right? He's like, makes anywhere from 20 to 30 an hour is what he would charge for this. I'm like, cool, let's just do that, right? Like, I want you to be happy. I want you to be comfortable. And I see the long-term potential. Same with my private money lender. Take your 12-3, perfectly fine. Still a massive win for me. And, like, I don't want any friction because I have bigger and better plans for us.
Yeah.
And then down the line, probably, you know what? Do a tenant.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
Do enough of them.
Dude, that's amazing. That's something I've not dabbled in the private. So it's definitely something I want to do in the future for sure. So,
but just having that.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. The goal is to get,
let's get there.
Let's get to that.
Well, it seems to be a progression of a lot of investors that I know. People start out like wholesaling, then they get into flips, then they get into rentals. And then all of a sudden, like one of the guys that is lending to me on a project right now, it's like he still does the flips and the rentals and all that other stuff. But like they've got 1.5 to 2 million out on the streets at all time. Part of it is their HELOC through some properties that they have. So they like borrow it at 8, lend it at 12. But the other is their cash, right? So they're making, just by lending the money, you know, well over $100,000 passively-ish every single year just by lending that money out. And the thing for them, understanding real estate, is he talked to me. He's like, you know, I see the numbers. Like, I see your comps. He's like, I'll do it and I'll give you all the money because what I know is that if you do fuck up, I can come in, I can finish that project. I have contractors, you know, I know scopes of work. He's like, I know the area well enough where like I can just fix it up, I can sell it, and I can recoup and probably make some money at the end of it. So it's very low risk, but it does seem like, yeah, eventually people want to be the person with the money. Everybody wants to be the bank. Sure. Yeah.
Now, man, like one of the things that I run into, it's like always the biggest headache for me when I'm doing just about anything in regards to real estate investing is contractors. So is that something you like kind of diligently had like a team kind of planned out before you planned on doing this, or does that change? Have your contractors changed or different people?
Yeah, that's a really good question and a pretty big hot button for most people when it comes to it, because there's a lot of bad contractors out there, just like there's a lot of bad real estate agents and bad. But I feel like when more bad of an industry comes out, when there's a massive need, right? So for real estate agents, it was like, and loan officers and wholesalers, it was like 2018 to 2022. It was so easy to be it. Everybody was it. And then all the shitty ones came through because it was low barrier entry and it was easy to be. This is what is happening with contractors right now. It's very easy to be a contractor. A contractor can literally like close up shop and not do a fucking like for a project, not do anything else for it and finish it uncomplete and walk down the street, like throw a rock and hit a new project that he could work on and get paid full price. So to answer your question, did I have a team starting out? No, but I lucked into one. There was a coaching program that I joined that a contractor had just split with his business partner and was looking to kind of make a name for himself. And so he's been, Dave Sotelo, who I was talking to you about, he's the one that I've been using for just about all, actually every single one of my projects so far. Him and I have become friends over it. You know, I've referred him a little bit of business along the way. And we've had a really good relationship. But now looking forward with my growth goals, it's like, I still have Dave, but my goal is to eventually build that in-house because I can save. And also Dave wants to do more flips and not, doesn't want to like scale a contracting company essentially. So I'm helping him pay the bills by giving him consistent work. And he's doing flips on the side as well. But goal is to broaden my contractor perspective. And eventually, like I said, I don't want a construction company, but I want an in-house construction team that focuses on my flips and my rentals. Yep.
Man, you got a lot of irons in the fire, man. Well, mentally, how do you prepare for all this? How do you stay mentally sharp? How do you keep that mental edge?
I think I don't know if you want like the basic stuff. It's like same as you guys. You know what I mean? Like make sure you make time for fitness. Make sure you're trying to eat right. Make sure you're trying to sleep. But I have a lot of irons in the fire, but it's all has synergy with what I'm doing, right? So I work for a real estate wholesaling company. That real estate wholesaling company brings in deals that I can look at. I'm underwriting deals every day. I'm learning about neighborhoods. I'm learning about contractors. Learning about biz on what things cost. So that helps me with my flips. That helps me with my rentals. And a lot of it is outsourcing. And I'm not saying it. I think people can under outsource and people can over outsource. Like you hear about a lot of entrepreneurs get to this point where they're like James Gleason is one. Like he would never outsource anything. He wanted to do everything and all the things at once. He had like 90 something properties where he was like mowing his own fucking lawns, like for each one of those. And you hear about that a lot. Like they struggle to relinquish control. I'm on like the opposite end of that spectrum. I would outsource a little bit too much starting, right? So it's like, I would just be like, fuck, don't like it. Find somebody else, like pay for somebody else to do it. There's a middle ground that I've found where it's like, I need to learn what this is at like, I need to learn, what is it? The Pareto principle, right? The 80-20 rule. Mm-hmm. I need to learn 20% of it. That'll get me 80% of the way there. And then when I have that down, I can look to outsource. So the general contracting stuff, not too difficult for me. I just had to get a guy for every category. Had to get a general carpenter, plumber, electrician, like go-to guys that I'm consistently giving business to and that I trust. So that when I'm closing on a project, I call all of them. I say, meet at this house, give me the bid before I close and let's go. For the contractor, it's like, the goal of mine is to bring on a guy, but have him work for other companies that I trust while he learns that side and see what it evolves into. So it's like, I'm doing a lot, right? But it's like, I'm not, you know, I'm pretty good at like keeping like a pulse on like my capacity and what it is that I'm doing. My number one thing is helping Faster House get to 300 house buys next year and growing that team. Because if I don't do that, I don't have the funnel and resources and coaching and development that can do all these other things. So, and I'm not trying to take anything away from myself. I think I'm doing a lot. I think all of us are doing more than, you know, 99% of the world. But I think it's a good, healthy balance of learning the things that you absolutely are necessary to learn and then knowing when to push things off to other people.
Dude, I totally agree. I've kind of been in both boats, like you just said. Like, I've definitely been the guy that, I think my first three flips, I was the one pretty much, I was in there swinging hammers, painting walls, doing all the things. And then, you know, I've also, but then it's honestly more on my personal like life that I've outsourced a lot of stuff.
You yeah.
know? Like, you know, cutting my own grass, hanging Christmas, like all these things like that I just used to do all myself. And like, I don't want to pay for that. I can do that. But now it's like, man, if I spend my time more wisely, like do the shit that I'm actually really good at that brings money in the door. Like, and then if I don't have to do all those projects, all those other things that I don't really necessarily want to be doing,
yep,
it opens up so much more of my time to do the shit that I'm good at.
Yes. So there's,
but you have to put the work, like some people will outsource and just won't put that time to get the work.
Yeah.
Yes. I used to be that person. I used to be like, I could just outsource this. When I was in my recruitment business, I would just like outsource. And it's like, no, I got to fucking learn and do the work. And then outsource, but it's you're outsourcing things that are below your dollar an hour perspective, right? Like how much money do you make? Divide that by 2,000 hours. That's your hourly rate, right? Cutting the grass,
same thing.
Yep, cutting the grass, putting on the Christmas lights, doing all that shit, and you don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
So it's like if it's like a high level thing, no, you probably shouldn't outsource it. If it's something that like, hey, I enjoy this because I get to do this with my family or I just enjoy it's like a fucking thing that's like meditative for me, whatever the fuck it might be.
Cutting grass.
Yeah. It's like if you enjoy it, then there's no point in outsourcing. So it's like, does it fall below, like well below your dollar an hour? And do you not enjoy it? Cool. Outsource it.
Yeah. I think that's a great piece of advice for a lot of people, because, man, people are just so, you know, it's like a control thing, and then it's also a financial thing. You know, it's like people don't want to let go of the control, but then they're also like, oh, I don't want to pay for that. I can do that myself. At least that's where I always fall into. It's like, oh, I can save the money by doing it myself. I can't tell you how many times I've shot myself, because it ends up taking me longer, especially when it comes to like rehabbing houses, because it's like, man, sure, can I paint? Can I do, you know, can I put some floor in? Can I do this? Yes, I can. But like, is it going to take me? It's going to take me way longer than, and it's probably not going to look as good as the guy who literally does this all day. This is what.
Yeah. And then you could use that time to focus on getting more clients, finding more projects. Yeah. 100%. And I think start to realize that in like high utilitarian types, right? So if you're like motivated by money, or you're motivated by like, is this good bang for my buck? Then it's really easy to like grasp that concept of like, I should just let somebody else do this.
Yeah, 100%. I agree more.
Well, I remember the last time we were here, we talked a lot about books. Read any good books lately?
Probably halfway through this year, maybe early this year, I dialed back the self-development stuff. Because my self-development was all coming from like learning my trade and the process that I was doing. And it's going in seasons. I'll have another season where I pick up and I do all this stuff. So I haven't as much. But we did read a book together called Tribe of Millionaires. And it's a book, it's a fable. And it's about a guy who, how do I put this as easily as possible? So it's a lot like you're the average of the five people you associate yourself most with. But a guy's dad passed away. His dad started this tribe of millionaires, and they help hold each other accountable. And there's a lot of principles along the way. So it was a good like read that wasn't too in depth of like processes and like how to do things, because that was getting to me at one point where I'm like, I want to read all these books, and then I would read a book and see all these things that I would need to do, and I'd be like, things. And it would get at me a little bit. So a little bit of a hiatus. Have you guys come across anything?
Yeah. Well, we do a book club here where Pat and I read a book together every month. And so that's kept us really consistent with, you know, reading just 10 pages a day is all I do. The old 75 hard.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But yeah, actually right now we're reading The Four Agreements, but this is like my favorite book we've read so far this year. Here, Almanac Naval.
Okay.
Really good.
Pretty good.
Easy, what is it?
Easy read. Naval, he's like this, like an angel investor in a bunch of things, like Twitter and Uber and all these things. He's been on quite a few podcasts, and this book wasn't actually like written by him. This was like written by this guy, Eric Jorgensen, who like took,
basically stalked.
Just stalked Naval's, like, yeah, and read through, you know, read, you know, watched and read all his shit, and like just like basically made a book on it.
Mm.
And dude, it's like the easiest read, because it's like you flip through it and like, see, like these like gray things,
yep,
that are on here are like just tweets.
Yeah.
Those are Naval's tweets. And so like he'll like go on there, and then there'll just be like a couple, you know, a paragraph about that tweet. Like kind
no
of
shit.
Elaborating. But like you could like just pick this book up to a random page and just like, you know, get like a little something out of it. And just really good. And honestly, if you ever want to like really kind of know what Naval is all about, he did an episode on Rogan probably like 5 or 6 years ago. And it was really fun. I rewatched that episode before we talked about this book, just because it was a lot of the shit that was in here was on that episode.
God damn it, you're making me want to read again. I'm like, oh, can I borrow that book?
It's, for sure. Yeah, thank you.
But I love the fact that you guys are doing a book club.
Yeah. It just forces us to keep it like, well, fuck, I gotta read, because I gotta talk about it for an hour and
yes,
at some point this month. Yeah. You know?
it forces you to articulate.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all stuff that's good, like good books and full of knowledge and wealth. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's been really good. Yeah,
I think my favorite one, 5 a.m.
5 a.m. Club was awesome. That's similar to the one you just described, where it's like a fable or it's a story. It's not like a self-help book. Because some of these self-help books are great, but they're not like the most fun read. You know,
yeah,
like the 5 a.m. Club was like a story, but it taught you shit. You know?
Yeah.
It was good.
Isn't it wild to think that there are a mass, like, majority of people don't read.
Yeah.
Don't read or listen or look to improve.
Consume like good quality shit.
Yeah.
I don't know. We say it all the time. You aren't growing your time, you know,
yep,
in some way. So I don't know. It's something that I always push for.
I couldn't agree more. And I just realized like, I'm like, we're just around so many people that do this.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes we think like, oh, this is just the way everybody is. And this is what, you know, we start to feel behind, right? We're like, oh shit. Like everybody's out there reading. It's like, no, the far majority of fucking people aren't doing anything. And I have nothing against Netflix, but like just watching like streaming shows and fucking scrolling on social media, getting caught up in the gossip. And there, you know, I'm a firm believer that everybody is allowed to live their life in any way that they want. And we're privileged enough to be fucking in America where that's an opportunity, right? But I just like, sometimes us as entrepreneurs or business owners, individual contributors have to sit back and think about like, hey, we're doing pretty fucking good. You know what I mean? Oh, even though it doesn't always feel like that.
I'm real hard. You know, it's really easy to be hard on yourself and say like, you know, and look at all the flaws and things you fuck up or whatever. But then you look at yourself compared to, you know, where a lot of people are and you're like, okay, I'm doing it. You know, but like you said, we get really caught up kind of in like our own echo chamber and like, you know, because the people you spend the time, you know, the most time with realize that they're doing all this shit. But then, you know, you see just other people are not consuming this kind of content and doing the kind of stuff about self-improvement that we're doing all the time. Just, it's really, you forget that not everybody does it.
And to that too is like, you know, we talk about here like health and fitness, but like, I feel like in my world, it's gotten a lot healthy. Like, I feel like everybody's healthy. Then I look outside and I talk to people and I'm like,
you stand in line at the election. You're like, look around. You're like, oh, wow. Oh, yeah. That was funny. Like one of my CrossFit coaches, we were laughing about, she goes, she's, you know, standing in line at the election. Cause I bet no one in here knows who Rich Froning is.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, I don't know. It is an interesting concept to think about. I got to ask a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Like all the shit that you're doing, the podcast, the work that you guys do, everything from jiu-jitsu, lifting, running, or whatever it is that you guys enjoy. Like, you guys, from a business perspective, are you guys having fun?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. 100%. There's good days and bad days. I mean, there's days where, you know, deals fall apart or, you know, something happens with something or, you know, you get an injury or something happens but dude, I look forward to all the shit I do. Yeah. Whether it's jiu-jitsu, whether it's CrossFit, whether it's, you know, real estate sales, real estate investing, you know, being a dad. I love everything that I do.
It's every day's different. That's great. Everything's different. But every day's different, the same. You know, I've got my non-negotiables that are the same every day has a different theme. So that theme is never going to change.
Mm-hmm.
But like things that I'm actually doing, I call the same real estate agents on Monday, I call new agents and have new conversations.
Right.
You know, Tuesdays are Tuesday updates. Those are updates are different every
week. Yep.
You know, podcasts, different guests, different conversations that we're having every week.
Yeah. Before this, we had a stand-up comedian on.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it was very diverse. You know, whether we're talking about bullshit, bombing on stage, and then have you on, and we're talking about real estate deals.
Right.
It's fun.
It's fun. And you know, Zach mentioned, you know, the, you know, when deals, you have your good days, your bad days, and deals fall apart. But like, I think my job can get really boring. So sometimes it's like nice to have, I've had a couple of appraisals come, had issues to appraise out, but they're subject to, and it's like, all right, let's figure this out. Or they don't appraise out. How do we navigate through this? It actually forces me to actually have a job.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the time I'm just talking to people, networking, talking, taking application, putting stuff in the system, really redundant, boring.
Yep.
And so it's nice having that change, having that, having some of those issues pop up, because it does. It adds a little bit of excitement, keeps you sharp, keeps you focused and motivated, and it's never dull or boring. So
it does.
There's always some excitement.
There is. And I asked that question because that's another thing I think about on a regular basis is where we're in the minority. It's like the far majority of people do not enjoy things that they do. And I'm just like, I'm just lucky enough to be around a bunch of people who do enjoy the things that they do. It's like, I couldn't imagine, like I said, every day is different. I don't enjoy every part of every day. But when I look at my life, I'm like a 10,000 foot overview, I'm like, I have so much freedom, so much flexibility. I'm like, my income's great. I see my net worth building. Health is on point. I get time to go on trips, right? It's like, and I have developed like a love for the game. Like it was Hormozy that talked about it. I'm sure multiple people have, but it's like, don't focus on don't get too obsessed with like having the passion, right? Like the passion for what it is that you do. Instead, have a love for the game, like the overall goal of what you're doing, because you get to do the things you're passionate about, obviously, like the things that are in your zone of genius. But if you have a love for the game, you're also going to force yourself into this area that like, I got to mold, I got to be a little bit of a chameleon, and I got to learn how to do X so that we can get to our ultimate goal. And I feel like real estate or business in general is the place to do that, because if all of our careers or wealth building in general were as easy as fitting a square peg into a square hole, it would get really fucking boring. And we'd want to fucking off ourselves. Yeah. Like it would fucking right. suck.
100%. Oh, totally. Just so thankful. Yeah, like you said, I'm so thankful I get to do shit every day that I want to do. You know, like even today, like I was just thinking about it when I was driving back home here, because I was like, I got to go pick up, you know, two memory cards, cameras. Fuck, you know, like I wish I would have thought about this yesterday. I'm like, man, I got the freedom to like be able to go do this right. Because there was a time in my life where no, I'm fucking stuck in this restaurant or this wherever, and I have to be here from this
clock
time
in,
to this
clock
time.
Out.
I'm like, I'm bitching because I got to go run to the store and pick up something for so I can sit down and record a podcast with my friends. Yeah. Like, what the fuck? What am I?
You know, we just spent what 3 hours talking to two different people.
Yeah,
so it's like,
come on,
it's wild. Yeah. And I have a job, right? Like, I'm a W-2 employee, yeah. But it's similar. It's like,
same.
I was gonna go into the office after this. No Fallon. I was talking to our COO Matt, who I report to. And then this got pushed a little bit. I was like, go Fallon, then come all the way to this. And I called him. Hey, dude. I didn't even need to call him, but I was just like, hey, I'm probably just like, he was like, cool. It's like, I come and go as I please, like freedom, the flexibility. God, the worst thing ever was was
handcuffed to a building.
Oh my God.
I hated
it. It was awful. And that was, you know, I've been in sales jobs or owned my own business for, you know, quite some time, but I always look back at like the serving industry. It was fucking best thing I'll never want to do.
Yes. Oh, like there's so many skills. Like I say it all the time. You're like, I just met with a kid pretty recently, like wanting to get his real estate license. You know, he's thinking about, you know, is this what I want to do, what I want to pursue? And he's like, you know, kid waiting tables at two different restaurants. And bro, you got a good, like to get a start in this business. You got a great foundation because you're used to going up to a table and making friends with perfect strangers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cause that's essentially what you're doing when you're waiting tables. If you're good at it,
it
you're,
is.
You're trying to make those people like you. Is really what it is, because yep. You're financially incentivized to do so.
100%.
And, you know, it's this kind of the same thing in real estate, really. I mean, yes, are the stakes higher? Is like, you know, people are making the, you know, biggest financial purchases of their life. So it's a big fucking deal, but still like the networking, you know, we've talked about that many times, but just the ability to go up and talk to somebody and make them like you. That's huge in business because people work with people that they like.
Yeah, they do.
And just having that leg up of experience in the restaurant, you know, you and me, huge. I think it was the best things I ever did, you know, for my, you know, for my real estate business, but I didn't know what I was doing at the time.
Yeah.
Just to collect my tips.
Right.
You know, but definitely grew some skills along the way.
It's a great industry to cut your teeth in no matter what, which way you go.
It's tough. It's tough. It sucks. You know, but it's great. What did you say? It's the best thing I never want to do again?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it.
I did catering, so it was a little different. I was supposed
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually, I did a couple of catering jobs. That was actually fucking great because like you didn't have to do as much interaction, but you still collected like some tips by the end.
Yeah.
So you should, I remember, I was in college when I showed up hungover. And I was like, you had to like yourself almost invisible. Yeah. And I was like, this is perfect. Like, I don't fucking talk to these people.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. And then I got beer money after.
Yeah. Yeah, the best. Mm-hmm.
Oh man, great to have you back on.
Yeah.
And love to hear. Glad to hear about all the success, and look forward to continuing to follow you along and all that. I know we did.
I don't think we did.
We didn't have. We didn't read that book yet.
No.
Oh, so, something new called the Tombstone Game.
Okay.
Okay. Here lies Matt. What's it say on your tombstone?
Yes. This to prep.
Nope. Nope, this is, we catch you off guard on this one.
So, hardworking, ambitious, and I would say a great friend. I would say those are probably like, I love the fact, I love knowing the fact that I'm hardworking. I love the fact that I'm ambitious. I like the fact that I have goals. And I think when those two things, when those two things are in play and I'm surrounded by other people, it's like, I think that's a way I help lift people up. And I say great friend because I was going to say connector. I was like, who the fuck wants to have connector on their tombstone?
That's a little weird.
But it's like, that's what we do, right? Like when we're connecting, it's not a transactional thing. Although it can be, it's like best friendships, relationships, right?
Yeah.
You two, right, are the ones that start out as business and that blossom into something more, sure. Which is a friendship. So I would say that would put on the spot. I would say that's probably the best I got.
Dude, that's perfect. I love it.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for paying attention to the show and tuning into this one. If you haven't, please click that subscribe button for us. Hit that like button. Comment what you guys thought below, and we will see you next time.